Ecclesiastes, but it was just last week, and we finished in chapter 9, where he gives us a summary of much of the book, and I just wanted you to see that right here again. When, I'm sorry, for some reason, this is on the wrong page, and I had it all set up. Yes, William, I feel the same way. The current slide, there we go. All right, so in verse 1 is where we are of chapter 9. He says, I know that all your life is in the hand of God. And that's one thing that Solomon learned and we should learn as well. It's good to make plans. It's good to have goals and everything. But we realize after a while, you don't have control over anything. The weather, your health, because you could be feeling good one day and then it feels like a truck hit you and you're on your bed for the next week. So you have no control. Man does not know whether it will be love or hatred. Anything awaits him. So our whole life is in God's hand. So then he gives the second thing. There's a fate that all of us are going to endure. And what was that? Do you remember? Death. Now, is he being a fatalist and being pessimistic and depressing? Or is this just a reality that helps actually shape and enlighten our life? If you know that someday you're going to die and it comes sooner than you realize, that's going to help formulate a worldview of how you're going to live this life on this earth. As you get older, I have discovered one of the things you do is get up earlier just because you can't sleep. And so you get up and there's not much to do except read your Bible, check your email, and listen to the local news. And I'm just struck by every morning, pretty much, local news out on TV on Portland, someone has died overnight. Almost every morning there's been a shooting. Someone was run over crossing the street, or there was a head-on accident, or every morning it seems like there's a fire or something and someone perished in it. Now, does anyone get up expecting today's going to be their last day? But for some, every morning it is. And that's just in our little locale. We're not talking about all around the world. And for each of us, there will be some day that it will be our morning, won't it? That we wake up and that's it. Whether it's a heart attack, we just pass naturally, we don't know. But he says there's that one fate that will befall every man. And so that's why he said, doesn't matter if you're a sinner or a good man, a death falls upon you all. And so he says, to be alive is so much better because a live dog is better than a dead lion because the dead lion can't do anything. But the dog, even though they're a varmint and they're viewed as disgusting in their culture, at least it's alive, okay? And so there's where he then finished with this. And so here's just a summary statement. There's five imperatives. He says, eat your bread in happiness. Drink your wine with a cheerful heart. Let your clothes be white all the time, and let not oil be lacking on your head. When would you wear white clothes and put perfume on, perhaps? A wedding. I mean, celebrate life. Enjoy the things that come by because they're so fleeting, and they won't come by again. So then the fifth one is joy the life with whom you've loved all the days of your fleeting life. In other words, the wife of your youth. The Talmud wrote this it's a kind of a commentary on the Old Testament. A man should eat and drink beneath his means, clothe himself within his means, but honor his wife above his means. I think that's nicely said, isn't it? You treat her like a queen because he says what? This is your reward. To celebrate, to enjoy some of the pleasures of life, to enjoy your wife, and not feel bitter or left out because you're looking at what you don't have and what others do have. Does that make a lot of people just miserable? and they can't enjoy what they do have because they're looking elsewhere. Well, there's where we were last week. And so now we want to pick up in verse 10 through 17. We're going to look at just some little words of wisdom to live by. And so we'll read them and make some comments about each of them accordingly. So chapter 9, any questions first before we go on? All right. Verse 10, whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might. For there's no activity or planning or knowledge or wisdom in Sheol where you are going. Now, Sheol is the Hebrew word for the place of the dead, all right? And he even referred to a lion, you know, being dead. It's not Hades necessarily. It's not where your spirits goes. It's just the dead, all right? And so it's not down, although they considered it's down and heaven is up. You know, Sheol is you go down to the grave, because when we bury people, we put them down in the ground. We don't lift them up. But when he talks about Sheol, he says nothing happens there. And the answer is obvious, but why is nothing happening there? Why is there no planning, no wisdom? Because you're dead. I mean, it's just so obvious. You're dead. And so what's he trying to say? There's nothing you can plan. There's no activity because everything's dead. So if you got just a little time in this life, whatever your hand finds to do, he says, do it with all your might. Two things are kind of maybe stressed here. What your hand finds to do. That might speak to your ability or your opportunity, right? Because not everyone can do everything. And sometimes things come along, there are opportunities that if you don't take advantage of them, they'll never present themselves again. And later he'll talk about the lazy guy, and that's later in chapter 10. But when opportunity comes by and you have the ability, then he do it with all your strength, with all your passion, and just enjoy it. Now, I just found some facts about working. So the average worker, Joe, in America, we could call him John or Bill, but his name's Joe, 40 hours a week. Whether that's typical or not, we'll just go with that. From age 20 to 65, and taking 2 weeks vacation per year. Did you realize 57% of Americans don't use all their vacation every year? Because they give it up and cancel it to go back to work because things are pressing. How many people do you think work on vacation or check in and doing that? They don't really vacate. Well, how many hours is that in one's lifetime? 90,000 hours of work you're spent of your life working. So that's why that you're working for the man, you know, you're a slave to the job, because much of your life is given to going to work. That's why it is said that, you know, blessed is the guy that loves what he does, because then it's not a job. You know, then he's doing something to enjoy it. It's something he would do even if he didn't get paid for it. Now, that's a blessing. Now, not everyone has that. But when something comes along, be passionate about it. Work hard. Yes.
I like to go to work and have all kinds of problems, because
then it's fun. It's fun. Well, it gives you a challenge and something to fix it, all right? It does, doesn't it? And you kind of illustrate the attitude. Even if you have a job you don't like, I also read by the time you're age 30, most people go through 9 jobs. Is there job security anymore? Like there used to be, you go one job for 30 years and retire? Not generally. In America, we have the ability, if you don't like your job, you can find another job often, right? You can train and do whatever. But can your attitude about how you work and approach your job affect the pleasure you get out of your job? Absolutely. I remember so many jobs I've had, people around me, all they did was complain. They complain about the boss, complain about the management, complain about how they do things. Well, if I was running this place, I'd do it this way. You know why you're not running it? Because you can't even do your own job, you know. You know, have you experienced the same? And after a while, you have to get out of it because they start dragging you down just with their dismal outlook on life. Everything's bad. Everything's wrong. So he says, live with passion. 80% of people are dissatisfied with their jobs. This is in America, all right? They spend over 100 hours per year, the average American, commuting. Well, I hope it's something you enjoy doing. You know, do it with passion is what he's saying. Workers, that's 57%. I like this little quote I found. Man was not created to be idle. Is that true? When God created Adam and Eve, what did they God do with them? Put in the Garden of Eden, which means, I think Eden means peace, but and he gave them a job to cultivate or take care of the garden. And he's always asked us to enjoy the fruit of our labor. That means we have to labor. So, work hard. Just work hard. It makes life a lot more enjoyable. So then, to the next verse, verse 11. He's going to notice some things that he's mentioned before, that there's these inequalities, and sometimes things, well, just don't work out the way you think they're going to be. I again saw under the sun, the race is not to the swift, the battle is not to the warriors, and neither is bread to the wise, nor wealth to the discerning, nor favor to the men of ability, but time and chance overtake them all. Moreover, a man does not know his time, like fish caught in treacherous net and birds trapped in a snare. So the sons of men are ensnared at the evil time when it suddenly falls upon them. I think these two go together when he's talking about time and chance. Notice these, the words that he uses. The swift, they don't always win the race. Why is that? Why sometimes the slower person wins?
Perseverance.
What else? Huh? He trips. Does that happen in the Olympics? You know, the expected gold medal winner trips coming out of the blocks. It's like, oh man, he hasn't tripped for 100 races. We call it time and chance. All right? There is this commercial going on now during March Madness. You watch a lot of basketball when you're sick. But this guy pulls up and it's snowy to his house, and he gets out and the tree falls on his car. What do we call that? Time and chance. And first thing he's worried about is what? His beats. And he goes, oh, it's good. He starts walking and then slips. Awesome. Time and chance. All right. How many times you've heard stories about trees actually falling on people and killing them? It's happened in Portland last year. I remember an account in Yosemite National Park that it was an open tour bus, you know, where they just can look around and they're just driving along. A limb fell off a tree, killed a guy. Not the person behind him, not the person ahead of him, but killed him. Time and chance. Now, is it because God's punishing you?
No.
I mean, it could be. But the first thing you think is what? Just time and chance, all right? And so it's not always the battle to the warriors or the strong. Sometimes you have an upset in sports. The more talented team, whether it's in football, basketball, or boxing, the lesser opponent prevails. And we love upsets. We love the Cinderella because we always like to root for the underdog. And there's been several of them in March Madness now. The one now is in the Final Four is Loyola Chicago. They're 11th seed, if that means anything to you. They're like lower echelon, and they're in now the top four teams in the country vying for the national championship. So when I say this, when the best team gets beat by an underdog, and it's a huge upset, and you just, wow, how'd they do it? If they played that same game 10 more times, who would win every 10 times? The top team. That's generally what would happen. But time and chance, every now and then, the strongest doesn't win. That can happen. And it's interesting, that three-point play at the buzzer, that's a shot from 22 feet out past, they could shoot that shot 10 times miss them, but the last time it goes in. Why? Because they were so talented? No, because you missed 10 already. But you made it at the buzzer, and if they were a little later, it would have been too late, but they made it right before. Sometimes it's just time and chance. Oh, I'm so good. No, you're not. You were lucky. Can we say that? And so there's no guarantee, so live humbly is what we're going to see here as well. There's neither bread to the wise or wealth to the discerning. And sometimes the people that don't have much sense financially do really well. But time and chance overtake them all. Have you ever asked why? Why is this happening to me? Now, Job asked that. I think the first thing you should always ask in self-reflection, is there something, God, in my life that you're trying to get me to correct? Is that fair? Because God disciplines those who he loves. Hebrews chapter 12. But often we go there and get stuck there. I must be being punished. I must be doing something wrong. Well, maybe you are. Maybe you need to take care of it. And God's gracious enough to have this happen in your life to wake you up so you don't lose your eternity. That, thank you, Lord, right? But after you realize, no, I haven't done anything, then a lot of times people start blaming God. No, sometimes it's the evil others have done to you, right? Sometimes it's trials that just produce faith, but sometimes it's just this simple time and chance. You're at the wrong place at the wrong time. Sorry. Life happens, doesn't it? Has it ever happened in the positive for persons? Good things happen. You're like, wow, I found a $50 bill the other day. Is that because I was so smart? Why? Because I was such a good, righteous person? No, I just happened to be what? The right time, the right place. Well, the other day, that was a long, long time ago, okay? All right, so that's what he's saying. There's no guarantees, but work hard. Enjoy it, because generally it works out, doesn't it? Right? So that's where he says, think about this. Just like a fish caught in a net and birds trapped in a snare. See this little bird? I found a picture of a little snare. And I like the thought of a fish trapped in a net because they've been fishing that way for centuries. They just throw a net in the lake or in the stream, and they wait for the fish to, you know, to get into the net, and they pull it up, and they got their meal. So now let's just think of a salmon going upstream the Columbia River, because they still, the Indians, the Native Americans, fish there, right, with nets. So you're going along, and everything's fun. You're jumping out of the water. You're going up the rapids. You're a big, you know, coho salmon. Life's great, and all of a sudden, uh-oh, what happened? You're caught in a net. Can you get out? Did you expect it? Were you planning on it? If you knew it was coming, what would you have done if you were a smart salmon? You would have swam around it. But it happened because you weren't expecting it because it's a trap. Time and chance. And that sometimes falls upon all of us, doesn't it? It's just a one of those things in life that you're going along and all of a sudden you find out you got to have triple bypass. Like, wait, where did that come from? I wasn't expecting that. That's just the way it is. Sometimes that's the way life happens, doesn't it? So joy today, because there are no guarantees for tomorrow, is there? Work hard. But as we're going to see, remember the God and fear God and keep his commandments in your youth. All right, does that make sense? The sons of men are ensnared at an evil time when it suddenly falls on them. No control. It's too late then, right? Just thank God for the good days you had. Ask him for patience to get through these evil times, right? Okay, so live with humility because your day might come. So look in verse 13. We're in chapter 9. As I came to see his wisdom under sun, it impressed me. There was a small city with a few men in it. And a great king came to it, surrounded it, and constructed large siege works against it. These are like batting rams, catapults. And so we have war in our day with fighter jets and tanks. Solomon observed this same type of warring events, but it was with mechanical arms, like, you know, I mentioned a batting ram. And he could see these big armies coming with all this technology. And verse 15, but there was found in it a poor wise man. And he delivered the city by his wisdom. Yet no one remembered that poor man. Now somehow this guy saved the day. I mean, it looked like it was going to be doom and gloom, and that's what he's talking about here. And yet this guy had the wisdom how to defeat this big army, this big complex, and yet when it was all done, didn't even remember who he was. Was there any statue mentioned for him? And so I looked and I said, I wonder if Solomon's talking about a real event that happened, and then there was actually a poor man who had this wonderful plan and saved the city. I couldn't find any evidence of it, probably for this reason. No one remembered him, so they don't remember the story even. Maybe Solomon did, but we don't know who he is. Now, what's he trying to teach us? Just like a little wisdom or foolishness can cause a lot of problems, wisdom is powerful. It can save a city, and yet you might not get the notoriety or the credit for it. Does that happen often? That's okay. Yes?
Well, I think when Samuel was appointed king by David over Israel, his attitude when the Lord came to him and asked him, what is it that I can do for you? Ask whatever it is. And he did not choose what normal men would choose. Riches, longevity.
You mean when Solomon came to him? Yeah.
Yeah.
You said Samuel?
Did I say Samuel?
Yeah.
I meant Solomon.
Yeah.
So, and then Solomon turned around and requested that he might be able to decipher and to judge justly the people. And God was impressed with that so much.
Right.
That not only did he give him that wisdom and the ability to discern, but also blessed him above all riches.
That's right.
And everything. So that's the attitude.
That's right. That's right. So you don't know. But wisdom is always better than strength. Goliath and David, speaking of wisdom and strength, who always prevails? It was not the mighty in that case, was it? So Solomon reflects, wisdom's better than strength any day. If you got a strong man and a wise man, give me the wise man, all right? But the wisdom of the poor man is despised, and his words are not heeded. Often because the way the wise man presents himself, he looks like he's poor, people, why would you want to listen to him, all right? That often happens. The words of the wise heard in quietness are better than shouting of rulers among fools. I think he's speaking of the political times of his days, and you hear politicians, and they're always, you know, they're lamenting something that's happening on the other side of the aisle, or they're, you know, denouncing some cruelty or whatever. But does anything ever get done? And I think the same thing was going there. The words of the wise are heard, which are heard in quietness, are better than the shouting of a ruler among fools. Wisdom is better than weapons of war, but one dissenter destroys much good. Just one. So now he's going to turn, and he's going to talk about what one little sin can do. So now we're in chapter 10. So you with me? So, dead flies make a perfumer's oil stink. So a little foolishness is weightier than wisdom and honor. All right? So this must have been, in their day, a phenomenon they experienced quite a bit. So you had your oil that you would anoint yourself with, and it would maybe perfume. You open up the lid, and you find a dead fly in there, and it somehow then made the whole thing putrid, and that which once smelled good now stinks. And all it took was what? Well, dead flies. So I guess it's in the plural. But that which is costly is now worthless. And he's saying the same way, just a little foolishness is weightier than wisdom and honor. And here's something we got to learn. You could have a great life constructed by walking circumspectly, using all the wisdom you can muster, but how much foolishness does it take to destroy what you've done? Just one act. How about David? Yep. Bathsheba. His life was miserable after then. His family structure and everything. Miserable because of one act. We can think of, who is the NFL player? I just heard he was down in Costa Rica. JC? Who?
I just know he plays for the Patriots.
Played for the Patriots. Got busted trying to carry in what? Some marijuana. All right? One act of foolishness. Say, well, it's legal in the States. Well, it's not legal down there. What were you thinking? But sometimes people don't think, and it's just one act of foolishness. You know, the person that gets a DUI, or the person that, even worse, drinks and hits someone and takes their life. One act of foolishness, and you're in jail now. Just one indiscretion. No, it's not indiscretion. We call it fornication. But just one flirting that leads to, like, I don't know how it happened. It just happened. Ends up breaking up a marriage. It just happens over and over and over. Just one lie destroys trust in a relationship that you'll never be trusted again. And it's just amazing how much of a history can be destroyed of a person's character and their reputation just by one act. I talked about the quarterback for the Washington State Cougars, number one draft pick, Ryan Leaf. One act of foolishness, it was drugs there in that case too, destroyed his career, and he'll talk about it and lament it. Just one act is all it takes. And that's what he's saying here, all right? A wise man's heart directs him towards the right, but the foolish man directs him towards the left. This is not a political statement, all right? The foolish man goes to the left. The right and left were known as, well, the right hand is the hand of strength. Is that typical for most people who are right-handed? And so you'd hold your shield in your left hand because it's the weaker offhand, and you have your sword in the right hand, okay? So even in Africa today, often people, when they'll shake their hands, they'll put their left hand right here, and then they'll extend their hand. And it's like they've let their shield down, and that's why they're grabbing their arm, and they're shaking, they're showing, I'm open, I'm vulnerable. You know, we're extending a relationship. So going to the left is a place of weakness. Going to the right is a place of strength. So in this scenario, going to the left would be foolishness, right? And going to the right would be walking in wisdom. That's what he's saying here. A wise man's heart directs him towards the right, to strength and prosperity. But the foolish man's heart directs him towards the left, weakness. All right? That's all he's saying here. Okay. Are some people inclined to foolishness? When it says the foolish man's heart, what'd you say, Rochelle? You laughed. Some are. I don't understand it. He's like, why'd you do that? I don't know. Well, are you going to learn from it? Yeah. And then next week? Why'd you do that? I don't know. It's just they're always going to the left. They never what? Yeah, that's true. That's right, they just act. But how about when it's an adult? That's right. All right, it's interesting. Chapter 10 uses the word fool 9 times. And I know you can't read this writing, but in Proverbs, Ecclesiastic, and Song of Solomon, that's the 3 books that Solomon wrote. The word fool, foolish, and folly are used 128 times. There's a big contrast between wisdom and the destructive nature of foolishness, all right? And again, you could have a life of wisdom destroyed with one act of foolishness. Okay, even when the fool walks along the road, his sense is lacking and demonstrates to everyone that he's a fool. What's he saying? Yeah, you know a fool when you see one, right? Everyone knows, like, oh, man. If the ruler's temper rises against you, do not abandon your position, because composure always allays, great offenses. This is interesting. Have you known people in your life, well, they're like that? Maybe a boss, a superior, or someone in a place of authority. And when you're treated that way, what's your first impulse? Well, yeah, maybe to hit them. But if you're working for the man, you don't want to do that. So second to hitting them, what would you do? Walk. I quit. I'm out of here. I don't have to put up with this. And I think that's what he's addressing here is if his temper rises against you, don't abandon your position. So in other words, it's a ruler. You must have some position in the government or whatever. But this can be applied to work or anything. Have you ever had your boss so upset with you and just like, oh, I quit? Wait a second. Sometimes some men, they just vent in front of you, and it's really not even personal. Is it out of line? Yes, it's out of line. But you can do more harm than good than by quitting, right? Just let it blow over. Have you ever been in a meeting where that happens? Whether, yeah, in government, school, in the church, you know. So if you let those things get to you, it's going to cause more harm than good. It's not appropriate, but how you respond is on you. Right? Do you understand what I'm saying? They'll be held accountable for their actions, but your response is your responsibility. So don't just quit. Don't just walk out. Don't just, you know, protest. You know, work it out is what he's saying here. Live with some self-control. One writer spoke of this as the ego-driven leader. And that's true. There are a lot of leaders that are ego-driven, and they can't be questioned. They can't be asked even why, because they take it as attack on their person. And so, all right, there's an evil I said I've seen under the sun, like an error which goes forth from the ruler. Folly is set in many exalted places, rich men sitting in humble places, and I've seen slave riding on horses and princes walking like slaves in the land. We've already talked about this. Sometimes things are upside down. Sometimes the people that are in the high places who are fools were put there because of cronyism. Right? They're in there because they know the mayor or they know the person in the top of the business. And so they get the positions of honor, not because they earn it, not because they deserve it. And things are backwards. Now, in that case, the business suffers, the government suffers, the school suffers. When you get people that are put into places where they don't deserve it, but just because of favoritism or paying off, you know, some type of debts they owe to him. We see it, and he says, it's an evil. So why is he recording this for us? Why is he recording for us? So what good does that do for us to know that it happens? So what good does that do for us to know that it's going to happen again? Yeah, don't get all worked up. I mean, it is an evil, you know, be offended by it, but sometimes isn't it easy for us to get, oh, I just can't believe it, I can't. And your whole life just gets turned upside down. It's happened, and it's going to happen again. Is it right? No, but let's just get through it. Wayne. Exactly. That's exactly. Your response is your responsibility. I'm going to really take a chance here because I don't want this to go political. But there was another shooting of a black youth in Sacramento last week. And there was big protests, Black Lives Matter. But the only thing that caught my attention, he was shot in the dark because he was stealing in people's houses, and they thought he had a gun, but they didn't know. But it was in the dark. And so my first question is, did they know he was a black man when they shot him? Probably not. It was in the dark because they had infrared cameras from above the helicopter. That's the only way they could see the guy. I don't know what they saw on the ground. But since it just happens to be a black person, oh, it's obviously another evil killing, right? People jump to conclusions so quick. But do things happen that are bad? Yes. But our response is our responsibility. Pick your battles carefully, right? That's all we can say.
Another thing, Jack, I get from these verses here and earlier ones is life is not the product of natural advantages.
Life is not the product of natural damages.
Advantages. In other words, you may be super wise, you may be super strong, you may be super wealthy, but there's a great equalizer.
Yeah.
And, you know, life's not always fair.
Because sometimes the undeserving, right. Yes, that's right. All right, real quickly, I think we'll have enough time. He who digs a pit may fall into it. Well, that's interesting. These are wisdoms about work. I thought, first of all, they're wisdoms about don't you try to get revenge, like digging a pit for someone, you fall into it yourself. But when you put them all together, he's talking about quarrying stones and splitting logs. This is about time and chance comes over all of us. So have you ever seen the scenario where someone was digging a hole and fell into it and couldn't get out? You ever heard of it? Yeah, it happens. So you got to be careful. If you're digging a pit to snare an animal, make sure you don't fall into yourself because you're going to be trapped, right? One of the biggest problems when you're trenching in excavation is when you're digging deep holes, you get down in there doing your work, and even if it's only this high, you're down there, often the trenches will cave, and they will bury you alive, and you can suffocate. And so a lot of people have lost their lives that way. That's why they put in those scaffolding, you know, those steel, there's a name for them, reinforcement, that you shore up the walls so you can walk in between them. You know that happens, and that's because Solomon said, we've seen the same thing. All right? Yes?
When you build something, I've built several of those systems you're talking about.
Yes?
And every piece of that has to have a record. And it all has to be tested and checked. But this is serious business.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes you go on the ground where that they call the column is the only thing you've got to protect. It will cave in on you and get you if you don't put it in there.
Yeah. That's right. That's why they have them do it. A serpent may bite him who breaks through a wall. What would that be talking about?
Not knowing what's on the other side.
All right, so you're breaking through a wall, trying to tear it down, whatever, and you're doing great work because whatever your hand finds to do, do it mightily. But you're not thinking because today we don't have, you know, these, what was the word? The kind of snake these are, the ones you charm. Yeah, like, we don't have these kind of snakes there, but they would hide behind the walls in the cool place. So you knock it down, you go, man, you're cleaning it out, and now in Eastern Oregon, you had to be weary of the rattlesnakes. And so if you found a little cave, you said, I'm going to crawl back in there. No, 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 no. I remember walking by a big outcrop rock. The rock was probably this tall, and there's a little path, and I was around there. And as soon as I got right here, I hear like, I'm dead, because there's a little path. I got through it, though. There were 5 rattlesnakes in that little crack right there, right? Now, be wise. I never got bit in my life in Eastern Oregon. Killed several of them, but none of them killed me. But does it happen sometimes? He who quarries stones may be hurt by them. Or this one, he who splits logs might be endangered by them. I've had more experience with this, working in the woods, state forestry, that often you get people that don't know what they're doing, and so we're on a hill, and there's a log, and then you're bucking up the log into lengths, and you're standing below the log when you're cutting it. What's going to happen when you cut through that log? It's going to roll down the hill, and who's the only thing that's going to stop it? You are, but you're not going to stop it. It's going to roll right over you. Happens a lot of times, doesn't it? So what's he saying here? Just think before you act. How many times do our parents tell us that? Just think before. My daddy say, engage brain before releasing tongue or something like that. In other words, start thinking before you start talking. It was some metaphor about shifting a car. All right. If the axe is dull and he does not sharpen his wedge, then he must exert more strength. True? Sometimes people say, well, if you didn't hear me, I'll yell a little louder. Does that solve the problem? Just yell a little louder? Well, if your words aren't getting through, what? Change your words, sharpen your words. Think about what you're going to say a little more. Right? Don't just beat someone up with I remember Chuck Knox, football. I can't hear you because your actions speak so loudly. I said, well, that's interesting, because I can't hear what you're telling me, because what I see you do speaks louder. And sometimes people have this attitude, if I just yell louder, it'll get my message through. No, it doesn't. It doesn't work. Wisdom has the advantage of giving success. If the serpent bites before being charmed, there's no profit for the charmer. You know, okay, he's putting on a good show, and he gets bit, doesn't work, right? A couple more, and we're done. Words from the mouth of a wise man are gracious, while the lips of a fool consume him. The beginning of talking is folly, and the end of it is wicked madness. Yet the fool multiplies words. No man knows what will happen. Who can tell what will come after him? What's he speaking of here? Think about multiplies words. They what? They talk more. They talk more. Well, they don't stop talking. Have you ever met someone? They have an answer to everything. Every topic, they're an expert on it. They can tell you about anything and everything. And you listen to them, you're like, oh, man. And my wife said, why don't you tell them that's your realm of expertise? No, just let them talk. Because the more they talk, the more they show themselves to be a fool. And we met people like that. And so that's why man stumbles in what he says. It says the perfect man does not stumble in what he says. That's James chapter 2. And so if you want to be perfect, just don't ever talk, because then you can't mess up with what you say. But choose your words carefully, all right? So beware of many words. Verse 16, we've talked about that. And so a couple more. Through indolence, the rafters sag, and through slackness, the house leaks. What's he saying? Laziness. It's foolishness. Like, oh, man, the roof's leaking because the rains finally came. Well, that's because you were lazy during the dry season. Now it's too late. All right? When it says money here is the answer to everything, he's going back to where he started. Just enjoy life. Money is the answer to everything. Can we qualify that statement before we finish class? What's he saying? Is money the answer to everything? Because what has he already told us the answer to everything is? Yeah, we haven't even got there, but up until then, he said nothing. It's all vanity. So you can't take this statement and discount everything he said up until now. So we have to clarify. What do you mean money is the answer to everything? He's already talked about riches are great, but when you die, someone else just gets them. So enjoy them while you have them. But in the same breath, he said it's better to have money than to be poor, because the poor suffer. So the money is an answer. It'll fix a lot of things. It'll fix the roof. It'll put a meal on your table. Money is a great tool. So he says, don't despise it, but prepare a meal. Make your life merry. Enjoy the money that you have. But we're going to get to it in chapter 12. When it's all said and done, fear God and keep his commandments. The last one we already read, don't curse the king, because little bird will tell him what you said and you'll get in trouble. All right. There's where we are, life under the sun. Thank you. Next week we'll look at chapter 11.